Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the 28th in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas, and I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. Today we are talking about corruption, and I have Gregor Rakowski, who's been with us one time, Charles Hayes, and Judy Donegan, who've been with us multiple times. And the first question has to deal with something that I usually don't do, but I did in this case, was asking you all personally if you had any stories, any narratives that you could share with us about corruption that you experienced or something that was told to you. Now, Charles, you want to bail on this because you couldn't think of anything, right?
Well, I can think of a lot of corruption, but I don't feel like I've been involved in anything that could indictable.
Well, you weren't corrupting yourself, is what you're saying. Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Gregor, did you come up with anything?
Well, as an employee of the federal government for most of my career, I routinely applied for positions in which it was, well, thank you for applying, but it's there was called an IPP position. That was the name of the bid, and we all joked that it meant individual previously picked, because that's how it ended up being 99% of the time. Somebody had already been picked for this position. You could apply if you wanted. They'd make the right noises, but you didn't get selected. That happened time and again. I never had the opportunity to be the one who was selected, but I saw the guys who the word was out that, yeah, that was who it was.
Okay, and how was that corrupt in your mind?
Having the appearance of a fair competition for a position above board, whereas underneath it was, well, why bother even trying? Everyone knows who's getting the job. This has been given to them. The position has been essentially created for them.
Judy?
Well, like Charles, I haven't been involved in corruption, I don't believe. But I worked for the federal government, for the courts for 30 years. And at some time, I came in glancing acquaintance with the Graylord investigation of Chicago judges. It was an undercover FBI investigation in the 80s, and ultimately 92 people were indicted.
Now, were there judges involved?
17 judges indicted, 15 convicted. And there were court staff, bailiffs, deputy sheriffs, and lawyers involved in this. Now, I had nothing to do with that. But many years later, glad to say, many years later, I was working in the Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, and we had a habeas corpus petition from two guys who had been convicted in Cook County Court of three counts of murder. They were drug dealers. It was a drug deal gone bad. And they were convicted and sentenced to death by a Graylord judge, a judge described as one of the worst judges in America ever. And so we had the habeas, and their claim was that what this guy did is, if you bribed him, in many cases, even in murder cases, he would make it, would somehow, you know, prejudice the trial. So perhaps you'd be acquitted. But if you did not bribe him, then he engaged in something they called compensatory bias, so that he would—
basically extortion.
Yeah, he would ensure, if you didn't bribe him, that you would get convicted. Mm-hmm. And in the case of these guys, they were guilty. I don't think that the conviction was any question. But a death penalty hearing is much more subjective. And So a judge would have the ability to kind of ensure that they would be sentenced to death. And that was the issue in the petition before the court.
So they were on death row when they filed the petition?
They were on death row. It's not quite as bad as it sounds, because in Illinois in 2000, then-Governor Ryan put a moratorium on executions because they were so badly administered.
Yeah, I recall that.
Yeah, and now they have repealed the death penalty altogether. But these guys were on death row. And so the court, the Seventh Circuit, this case went to the Seventh Circuit. It went to the Supreme Court. It came back to the Seventh Circuit. And in an en banc hearing, the conviction was upheld, but the death penalty was set aside on the basis that it did appear that this judge was throwing the trial against these guys. So that's like kind of peripheral from me, I suppose, although I worked a lot on that case. But I think it shows how far-reaching the tentacles of corruption are and how long the ramifications can last. And this was not the only case that involved bad convictions and whatever from this particular judge, and there were 14 other judges convicted.
Have you noticed whether loyalty to individuals or loyalty to the group mission plays any part in whether an organization becomes corrupt? Like, I'm thinking about your example, Gregor, where you have, you know, people who would have the job already awarded to them. So do you think that loyalty to the individual played a part in that?
It's an interesting question, because you could actually, by that stretch of imagination, you could say, I mean, traditionally, if you look at the Marine Corps, what's the hierarchy of the Marine Corps? A corps, country, God? Well, what's the, I'm not familiar with it, but you're familiar with the...
Nah, not really.
Well, there's a hierarchy in their mythos, as it were, and it, above all else is the core. You put the core above all else. And
Semper Fidelis means always faithful.
Absolutely.
I'm an ex-Marine.
Well, okay,
so you know what he's talking about?
He's familiar with the motto, as it were. And I'm saying, taken to extremes, that motto itself could be seen as a form of corruption, because if that's what you're loyal to, you're going to cover for the core at the exclusive of all else. God, country. I mean, that seems, it depends on where the loyalties are of the person doing the observing.
In the nature of human beings, that anytime you have an organization with a high vertical hierarchy, that and there's no transparency, corruption is inevitable. I'm working on a book about police behavior, and it's common knowledge that police departments close ranks and become protective.
The blue line, exactly.
Right, the blue line. Okay.
My brother's a police officer in Santa Rosa.
I was a police officer in Dallas, Texas in the 60s for a little over 4 years. But this Lawrence O'Donnell, a guy on MSNBC, wrote a book in the 80s called Deadly Force. It's about his father, who was an ex-Boston police officer who became an attorney. And he took a case for a lady in the mid-70s whose husband was shot on a stakeout. And it was a bad shooting. It was he was the wrong person. Anyway, long story short, the Boston Police Department went to extraordinary efforts for years to cover it up. They kept covering it up. Well, Lawrence's father took the case. He went through all sorts of situations and got a judgment, but that didn't work out. But anyway, the point was that O'Donnell thought he'd done a great service for the country for bringing police behavior to a head at that point in time.
At least expose it a little bit.
Right. But at the end, when he's talking about this, O'Donnell says, talking about his father was on the department, I think, about 4 years or so. And he tells about the situation where his father caught two burglars, and he let one of them go because he was a sergeant on the Boston Police Department from another precinct. And that, I still can't get over that. Corruption, my God. The shooting was bad enough, but then to admit that the guy that is a hero for weeding out corruption would do something like that.
Well, and he didn't see anything wrong with that, though. He didn't see it as corrupt.
No.
That's why you get back to your statement that it's internal. All corruption is internal. You can't legislate it out. You and I talked about this earlier this week at a game briefly.
Well, Judy, do you think about loyalty to an individual that lends itself more to corruption, or what do you think about that?
Well, I suppose so. I'm thinking back to what Greg said about the posting of jobs that are intended for someone else, probably already working in the organization. It's sort
generally,
of
generally, yes.
Step up, and that's a form, I think, of loyalty to your current employee over what would be fair to everyone else applying.
How much does the corruptibility of the alpha or the top guy in an organization impact on whether or not it becomes corrupt? For instance, let me paint it this way. If you have an organization that has a tendency to become corrupt, but then somehow a top guy is really a fair and honest individual, does that have an impact on whether it maintains its corruption? Or if you have an organization that is not corrupt, and the top guy is a corruptible type of individual. Go ahead, Charles.
Well, if you have a top guy who's uncorruptible, then that helps a whole lot. Uh-huh. And if you have one that is corrupt, it just goes south in a hurry. We have an example of that right now.
So the alpha in the organization is a key component to whether the organization is corrupted.
Well, let's look at what's the organization that's in the news now for corruption, the woman,
Senate Judiciary Committee.
No, well, let's not Senate. No, there's a they have a blood. They were a blood analysis program company, and they had a new technique for analyzing blood. Oh, you know what the one I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I forget what the woman's name is.
Yeah, 60 Minutes.
Yeah. But that woman, the people at the top of that company were corrupt body and soul.
Oh yeah.
And that whole organization is rotten from the core all the way to the tips of the branches right now.
Went from billions of dollars valuation to zero.
They swindled thousands of investors out of billions of dollars in that. Look at it. Let's give an example the other way. What's the most honorable corporate that you guys can think of right now? I mean, really, one of the ones that I think of is Google or Microsoft. They seem to be doing things right these days, never mind what went on between Microsoft and Apple back in the day,
but
they seem to be good corporate sponsors in any event. Google seems to be treating their employees right. Microsoft is at least making an effort, from my perspective, to be a good corporate partner in the communities that they enter in the United States.
We can talk about algorithms too, but go ahead, Judy.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking on that. I think it's a little hard to know without being inside those corporations, but I think that whoever is in charge of an organization or a department or a company has a major effect, I have seen, on the way that office operates. In contrast, two offices I've worked under, and with the head of one being interested in giving good public service, good service to the public, and the other one not really caring and not paying attention, and that filters down to all the people that work there. So I think corruption would do this same thing.
This is from our tech guy over there. Does corruption always require malevolence and intent, or can it occur just because of ignorance?
Oh, things would be a whole lot easier, a whole lot better if corruption in this country were not legal. It is legal. We have a paper play. I mean, we buy politicians and they do what we want to do, and that's corrupt.
So my next question had to do with the Constitution, and according to you, Charles, here, the Constitution doesn't really have sufficient language to prevent corruption from taking hold of our federal government. Now, what we have impeachment clauses. We have the article where we can impeach the Supreme Court justices and an article where we can impeach the president. And that's basically all the language that we have in the Constitution to prevent corruption. And you're saying that it's insufficient?
Even if we overturn Citizens United, you still have to go through and put a check on all the places where you can put money into changing the system against the will of the people.
I think Senator Warren has a proposal now to prevent any former congressman or senator from becoming a lobbyist ever, which would eliminate some of that problem, and also other provisions that aren't coming to mind right now. But the other thing we do is it's not just impeachment or the Article 26, is it 26 or 25?
25. The 25th. 25th
amendment. But, you know, there are criminal laws, and you can, as she is proposing, there could be a law passed, not that it has a chance and whatever to get passed, but there could be a law passed against that sort of pay-for-play that you see.
So the Constitution accommodates statutes coming later on that could.
We should have public financing for elections, period, and no politician should be in the position to get money from anybody, period. And that would make things a whole lot better.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, I just wanted to go back to what
Judy
said about, you know, she pointed out it's as and I don't want to be dismissive or derogatory. She brought it up like it's a good thing that Elizabeth Warren has introduced this bill, and you went on to describe what the bill does, which is something that we'd all want. But in the very next breath, you turned right around and you said what I first said, which was like, do you honestly expect that bill to have a chance in hell of passing with those people in there? They put it out there as window dressing, and then they turn around, and when you're not looking, you've been distracted by something else, that bill gets shuffled off to the wayside, and they never do anything about it. This is the same organization that has allowed to use insider information to trade contrary to the laws of this nation like none of us else gets to do. They get to use insider trading information. Have they done anything about that?
Well,
no.
The thing is, though, I'm not sure you can put them all in the same barrel. If she is, I think she would probably be sincere about wanting that kind of reform. I think she showed that when she was in charge of the whatever.
Consumer protection.
Mm-hmm. Right. but you're right. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I'm not so naive as to think that a bill like that's going to get past the current Congress. It's not. It won't even get to the floor in either house right now. But maybe because I worked in the federal government for so many years, I think there are good, at least in the courts, and I had more faith several years ago than I have now, but that there are good people who want to do the right thing, but I think right now there aren't enough of them.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF, Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Talking about corruption with Gregor Rakowski, Charles Hayes, and Judy Donegan. Since the Constitution uses impeachment by the House and conviction by the Senate as the remedy for high crimes and misdemeanors committed by the president, it does not give any language that says a president can or cannot be indicted. How do you interpret this lack of constitutional or statutory language regarding criminal liability of a sitting president? Because there's no law either. Besides the Constitution, they did not give us any law that says a president can or cannot be indicted. So how do you interpret that?
Well, they just have to submit it to the Supreme Court. I mean, they just have to indict him and then see if it.
So you're looking for a Supreme Court ruling to make that determination
because we're in limbo
right now.
Because it takes 2/3 vote in the Senate to remove the president anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are accusations back in the day. I'm just harking back to a book I read. Read a book of Washington's biography. It was some years ago, but in all of the election brouhaha that he had to go through, this is our first president, and in the run for his reelection, too, some of the things that were said about his administration, the accusations that were made, they're similar to some of what we're seeing today. But at the same time, the level of this you know, I want to say that what I meant to say with the beginning of this point was that 220, 230 years ago, I think it was expected that the opposition would do what they could to throw obstacles in your path, but it was necessary for a sitting president to be effective, to be free from useless lawsuits of this and that and the ticky-tack that would prevent him from focusing on the job. And that's why there isn't a lot of ways to legally address a sitting president. He needed to be free from these trappings to do his job.
They're giving.
Unfortunately,
right now,
yeah. We have reached a point in history where this is not an effective method, because we have added so many levels of bureaucracy and so many levels of different power trappings on this office and on our Senate and our legislature, that there's no real. What am I trying to say here? I started off in one direction. I kind of got lost. My point was that back in then there was less need for this type of thing, whereas today it seems like from the moment you're a politician, you may start off with the best intentions. But it seems to me the very first time that your politician that you may have trusted and that you may have had some faith in has that meal with a lobbyist and figures out that in order to get reelected, I have to get the money from this guy. I have to get the money from all these people who are going to donate to me. And it's not within the wherewithal for them just due to the job. They have to get about the money. It's all about the money now. And this creates a problem for us that they didn't think about this 250 years ago, because this problem was not going to come up. It was only the landholders who could even run for office. They had all the money they needed. It didn't take a millionaire just to run for office.
I think they knew, though, that corruption was a possibility. That's why the impeachment clause is there.
High crimes and misdemeanors. And moral turpitude was another reason at one point in time.
But anyhow, I'm thinking they weren't entirely naive about the possibility of this. And as far as whether or not you can indict a sitting president, I'm not sure that needs to be in the Constitution. Another thing that Elizabeth Warren has presented is an idea that there should be a law that you can indict a sitting president, or that there is no impediment to it. And then, as Charles says, ultimately that would go to the Supreme Court. And of course, right now we can't really tell how that would come out.
Let me throw another scenario at us here. What if the president decided that he was just fed up with these protesters outside the wall of the White House, got his AK-47, went out and started spraying bullets through that crowd, and we have the Secret Service with him right there? You know, would the Secret Service protect him, allow him, or how would that play out? Would he be then indictable for murder if he chose that?
If I were the Secret Service man, he would be shootable.
Uh-huh.
I think they'd try to stop him. At least you can hope they would.
Would that kind of settle the issue right there if he decided to start firing his AK-47 at a crowd of people?
Probably.
As far as whether there should be a law or...
Wait a minute. I thought this was a discussion of corruption, and now we're going back to a Second Rights Amendment here discussion. Is that what we're doing now?
Well, there's a bit of corruption, in the discussion of Second Amendment. Yeah.
Of course.
So would that settle it then? That's my question. Do we need something that dramatic in order to, because this debate is going on. Rudy Giuliani and Alan Dershowitz go on TV and they say that we can't indict him because he's president, no matter what.
I think we're probably going to get an answer to this.
Prior to the AK-47 spraying bullets?
No, I think the constitutional crisis is dead ahead, iceberg dead ahead. We're going to find out something here pretty soon, I think.
The front page news now is Senate confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. The Republicans on the Judiciary Committee hold an 11-10 majority and therefore call the shots. Charles Chuck Grassley is the chairman, so he's making all the decisions. None of the decisions regarding process, hearing, schedules have included any input from any Democrat on the committee. At least that's the reporting I've heard. Do these actions or behaviors by Republicans on that committee with a clear goal of getting Kavanaugh confirmed represent corruption in your mind?
Well, it's a corruption of imbecility to me that we don't look at this as in a different way. I mean, is it logical to think that if you're drunk that you do something that's out of character? I mean, for God's sakes, just think about that a minute. I mean, and nobody ever asks that question. They don't ask, Judge Kavanaugh, do you feel like that if you were drunk that you would do something that's out of your character? Why don't they start with that premise?
Well, he said no on Fox News on Sunday.
They asked that particular question?
Mm-hmm.
What, about drunk?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
hear it.
It's hard to keep up, which is kind of why it's hard to...
Well, just today, the third accuser has been named by Mr. Avenatti.
Right.
Just today.
So, you know, we're talking, although this won't be broadcast, we're talking the day before the hearing, and heaven knows what could happen between now and tomorrow. But
well, basically,
I think it is corrupt.
Okay.
And I think that, I think one of the most telling things for me is that if Judge Kavanaugh is as pure as he seems to want us to believe, why isn't he distancing himself from Trump's statements yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's my basic question. Why are you letting these people, in the name of getting you on this job that you seem to feel entitled to have, why aren't you saying, no, I would prefer to get this in a honorable way?
If I was falsely accused, I would demand an FBI investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would get to the bottom of it. That's what he's afraid of, I guess.
Well, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to know what's going on or what's in his mind, but... I think I would disavow what the president did yesterday.
Which was what? What exactly?
Well, he was really maligning, I think, Ms. Ramirez.
The second woman.
Woman.
Right. Because she was drunk at the time of...
She's inebriated. She didn't know when it was happening. Acting it out. And in a way that the president of the United States, the most powerful person in the world... should not be doing to an ordinary citizen. I think it's totally inappropriate.
Judiciary Committee corrupt, Gregor?
You know, I think across our political system right now, we've reached a point where, and I'm appalled, quite frankly, at the Republicans and their willingness to, as long as there's an R by your name, baby, we don't care what you did. We don't care what you did. We don't care what you're guilty of. We don't care what you were accused of being guilty of. We need to get you in there because it's about our ideology. The end justifies the means, and I have a real problem with that. I think if I'm using Republicans specifically or conservatives, you know, there's one groupthink that I'm specifically referring to, and however you define it, it's the people that are led right now in the party by Donald Trump and by Mitch McConnell too, because these people are all right now in the same canoe. They're all in the same canoe. Get Kavanaugh rammed through because it's all about the Supreme Court, because if we can get a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, we can change the face of the nation for the next 50 years. That's what they care about.
The GOP is way ahead of the Marine Corps in being party before country.
Well, that's true.
That's true. And I read an interesting thing that, you know, you talk about the Congress and McConnell and Trump, but the people who support them through all of this.
Re-elect them continually.
Yes, and when they are doing things that you would expect Trump's base, whatever that amorphous group is, to really object to. But I read a thing that said, it's on corruption, that what we think of as, what we're talking about as corruption here, is not what the base is thinking about corruption. They are thinking about corruption of the status quo, the patriarchy. The
corruption of the dominant paradigm where the white man is control of everything, black man is marginalized, the women are chattelry, and all of the other immigrants just come in to do the low labor jobs and then are kicked back out the door. That's the dominant paradigm that we grew up with in the 50s.
And that's corrupting that is the corruption they're worrying about.
It's corrupting what they're calling white privilege these days is what they're calling.
Are there any actions by the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee that you think are corrupt? There has been some labeling about a smear campaign going on now. Do you think that that has any legitimacy that the Democrats are doing?
With what they're doing with these witnesses, I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think sometimes I'd like them to do it differently, but...
Talking about the Feinstein holding on to the letter.
I don't really understand that. I mean, I understand trying to protect someone's privacy, but I think that whole thing, I'm not saying that's corrupt, but I don't understand it.
Mishandled, maybe?
Yeah, I just...
Well, on top of that, and it may be part of the reason that they sat on it for a while, is that let's be honest, I'm not following this particular situation as closely as perhaps I could, just because I'm getting corruption overload in my mentality these days. But I understood that this Ms. Ford's Facebook page had essentially been scrubbed fairly recently. And it's one of those things that, well, you know, guess what? You can't even come forward with any allegation right now because everything in your life is going to be micro-itemized.
Yeah.
I want to know what was on her Facebook page that they had to scrub, that they felt necessary to scrub, okay? I'm not saying that...
Well, it could have been some friends of hers that, you know, they wanted to keep from being involved in
I heard, and I hate even saying this because I think that I may be just... This may be one of those fake news things that I'm reporting, that I'm repeating, okay? I heard on one of the right-wing commentary stations that, or one of the right-wing websites that I happen to end up on every now and then, that she had posted on a previous Facebook page during the previous judge, that Neil Gorsuch, that someone should claim a rape case even if it wasn't true and just push it to derail it. Now, if she said that on the Facebook page, and people have a habit of putting stupid stuff on their Facebook page, that may be, that would be a problem for me. But the fact that we've reached an age where before you even say anything or do anything, you need to delete, you need to wash your Facebook page, irritates me because how can I assess what your character is if there's nothing left for me that you post publicly to access?
I don't know about that because I have a feeling that that right-wing commentator kind of might have made that.
Well, he made it. But why wash your Facebook page? Is your Facebook page out there?
Because there are people who are connected on that Facebook page that you don't want drawn into this.
I understand.
And, you know, your mother or somebody.
Your children.
Yes, right?
She has two children.
That's right. Why I would say it would be a good idea. I think it's a good idea not even to have a Facebook page.
I don't.
So,
okay, but one last point, and I'll leave it, is that, I mean, this is what I'm thinking about here. From my perspective, I think how horrible, you know, that this may have actually happened and he may be getting away scot-free or maybe considered for a position where he has no right being there because he lacks the character. But I have to say, what if the other side is right? That's where I think sometimes – what if they're right and this is all a lie, a smear campaign?
Give Judy a chance. Go ahead, Judy.
Well, I'm thinking we have trouble thinking about this in the right framework. And I'm not saying this is quite what you were just doing, but, you know, he is being accused of a crime, I guess, but he is not being charged with a crime. He's not entitled to a presumption of innocence. The burden, I think, in this situation should be on the candidate to prove that he is worthy. And it, of course, part of that, if he can show... And he wants to show that these people are accusing him falsely. They're smearing him somehow. Okay, that's legitimate. He should be able to protect himself. But as I said before, he's not acting like a guy that's trying to do that. And they keep trying to switch, I think, the burden here. The burden is not on Christine Ford. The burden is on him to say, I am a worthy person. My judgment is good. And I should be on the Supreme Court.
You mentioned the influence of individuals earlier. When John McCain was alive, him and Lindsey Graham were really, really good friends. Lindsey Graham cares a lot about what John McCain thought. John McCain is gone now, and Lindsey Graham has become unhinged.
He has no mooring star.
This is Bridging the Gap on KBRF, Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. We're here talking about corruption with Gregor Rakowski, Charles Hayes, and Judy Donegan. Is it fair to say that partisan Republicans believe the Democrats, such as Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, are corrupt? Do they believe it? And is it fair to say that strongly partisan Democrats believe that Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, and Paul Ryan are corrupt?
Well, I think the answer is yes. And I think that's what's too bad here. And it's what you were saying before, as long as there's an R or a D after someone's name, you land on one side of that issue or the other. And I don't think that's very helpful to our society.
For advancing. One.
Yeah.
Charles?
Well, I think...
The question is, partisan Republicans believe that Hillary, Nancy, and Chuck are...
Yeah, correct. Sure. Okay, sure. Okay. And it's
and partisan Democrats, yeah. Do they believe then that...
It reaches an emotional realm where facts don't matter. I mean, it's just, it's us and them. I mean, when it reaches that point, nothing matters.
You keep this up, you're taking away all my questions. That's my very next question.
Well, no. But, you know, sometimes I wonder that about myself. Like, how much do I knee jerk one way or the other? And, you know, frankly,
do you worry about that about yourself?
I do
consider that, certainly, mm-hmm. about myself, and I try to analyze what I'm looking at and what I am believing. But somehow in this situation, I find it hard to come down on it, even when I do examine what I'm doing on any other thing, partly because of the way people are acting.
What do you think about that, Gregor?
I think if you're a Democrat, you find yourself, or if you're a progressive, you find yourself questioning, because that's what progressives do. We want to make sure, do we have the right answer? Do we have the best possible answer for the situation? So we consider ourselves fallible, and that's where we open up the door, because the problem is, it's the Republicans who say, no, I'm right. There are no other answers. And the fact that I think that you say it's the Democrats who look at this and say, this is the problem we went into. I had a great point a few seconds ago, and I've morphed it, and now I've lost it. It's really irritating.
You've been losing a lot of things.
My mouth moves slower than my brain significantly. I think that it's significant that as a progressive, you say, I wonder if I'm making the right decision. I wonder if I'm doing that, because I know so many. I mean, look at what came out of Trump's, I'm the only one who can fix it. Mm-hmm. I know what's wrong. I'm the only one. Look at what happens. And the other thing, this is what I wanted to say. This is how I know that I'm on the right side, okay? I watch what happens in the political spectrum, and I watch things like what has gone on with, the name of the gentleman who was one of Trump's handlers, who was about 6 months ago, he was found to have been beating his wife regularly, I guess.
Porter.
Oh, Porter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I say, exactly, I told you, because that's what the conservatives do. Okay.
But their wives.
Al Franken gets caught up in the Me Too movement, and what does he do? He does the honorable thing and resign. I'm shamed. I'm disappointed, because I thought he was one of us, and I said, that's not my value system. That's not the way the progressives want things to go. Yes, it's the conservatives that want to promote that dominant paradigm where, hey, women don't have any power. We don't even want them in the halls of power. We don't want them with the vote. We don't want them with the driver's license, for Pete's sake. If you go far enough to the right, you will find that attitude.
Okay, now we've already answered this somewhat, but I just want to give the more weight there. Do facts or ideology give the most weight when it comes to determining a belief that a person is corrupt or not? So I think you said that the progressives kind of maybe look at facts more.
Whose ideology? Because right now there's one side of the playing field that believes they have their own set of facts.
Liberals and conservatives process this stuff in different parts of the brain.
I knew you were going to get this in, Charles. Here's your segue. Go for it, buddy.
Well, conservatives rely more on the amygdala, the place where is the heart of fear in the limbic system. liberals rely more on the interior insular or cingulate. I'm having a senior moment here, but it's a different region of the brain, and conservatives, for the most part, I think, don't develop that part of the brain. Period. I sort of have a big interest in whether or not maybe that forecloses in an early age. If you don't develop that, it just shuts up. But they don't have a lot of empathy or sympathy, and that's where it's developed. And I think if you get started with it, you can reinforce it. I think it's like a muscle, because I am much more empathetic and sympathetic as an old man than I was a young man. So I think...
We're rare creatures. We're rare creatures in that regard.
Yeah.
The demographic that I'm very much ashamed of is being an old white man.
Yeah.
You know, I feel I'm way more aligned with black women as far as my thinking goes than an old white man.
Well, as an old white woman, I think that possibly also one of the problems that progressives have also is that we don't see easy answers. And so that's why it's so hard in a political campaign, because our answers are more nuanced. They're more, you know, we talk a lot. And somehow we just don't come out and say, you know, I'm right. I'm the only one that can fix it. I can't imagine a Democrat saying that.
The simple answers sound so appealing, but the simple answers to complex problems just create more problems. They don't solve the problem.
No, the answer for Hillary and corruption is Benghazi. You know, we just say Benghazi. That's it. Very simple, very straightforward.
Well, yeah. Well, Benghazi, I mean, if you can achieve looking at the other person, whether liberal or conservative, if you can put them in the insular cortex, in the place where disgust is, the game's over. There's no sense that you can't argue with that, because they're disgusting and there's nothing can be done about that. It's just an us and them situation.
The thing that I have that has disturbed me a lot over the course of time, and I have 16 years of college education that was Catholic education. 16 years of my education was Catholic, you know, parochial school, high school, and college, is that religion holds certainty. And if you have a belief that this is what God wants, that's it. There's no shades of gray there. And I kind of think that the conservatives, based on what we're saying here, sort of hold that belief as well, that we are very certain that this is it and that there can be no discussion because of that certainty. So my question to you all is, does this religious fervor or the allegiance with religion kind of lend itself also to the idea that this is the way it's got to be, and therefore if it becomes corrupt, doesn't matter because that's what God wants?
To me, the notion of faith is purposeful illusion. And if you threaten that, you threaten their mortality.
Wow. Anywhere to go with that? Did you say purposeful delusion? Is that the
illusion?
I don't know that you threaten their immortality. Not just their mortality.
Well, you're right. Well,
mortality
salience is what the terror management people call it.
Well, if you have to use your faith to sculpt your political ideology, why don't you use the loving parts? Why do you just focus on the hateful parts all the time? That would be my question.
That's a good question.
I read the Bible quite frequently, in fact, for someone who's a non-believer. I think Jesus' philosophy was one of the most beautiful things I've ever read. And if you live by that philosophy, you're going to live a wonderful life and you'll be well thought of after you're gone. But if all you pick and choose out of the Bible is the hatred and the stonings and the ostracisms and the exclusions, if you're going
I'm
to
not
use
sure
that...
I'm not sure they're necessarily picking that. I think what they're picking is the fact that God wants what I say. You know, I say this, that's because God wants it, and therefore that's how it must be. And I think there's a lot of that coming out of the Republican aspect.
God says love one another. God says love my neighbor as they fell self.
Does society in general feel outraged by corruption, or is it a normal part of reality that we just have to accept? Are we just like so inured to corruption that we just have to accept?
The biggest problem is indifference. That's what Elie Wiesel argued all the time, that the the fundamental problem is indifference. It enables all the bad stuff.
Judy, is society outraged enough, or we just go ahead and accepting it's normal?
I think we're getting used to it. I mean, you can only maintain outrage for so long, I think. I'm hoping we're not inured to it.
Great.
But,
we
watch our president be laughed at the United Nations. Mm. And, I mean, I find that embarrassing. And humiliating, and I don't know if, I mean, do we just accept that and laugh and say, oh, well, that's Trump being Trump?
He embarrasses me when I'm alone.
I know.
I have to mute the television and just close caption it.
His ride down the escalator embarrassed me. Are we accepting it as normal, Gregor, or is something that we still, you seem to be pretty outraged by things.
I emote fully is really all it is. I'm not all that outraged. I'm just a vibrant person. Here's the thing is that, as I said, corruption is, it's innate to human nature. Okay. It's something that we have to deal with. Yes, we can try to put rules out there to control a bit of it, legislate it. You simply can't. You go to South American countries and it's just accepted that there's a certain amount of bribery that takes place on every transaction. There's a certain amount of grease, they call it, right, that you have to pay. Fortunately, I think whether you the question to ask is, are we inured to it? Well, the human engine can only take so much emotional expenditure, and then it's natural that we move on. It's what allows us to move on after we lose a child, after we lose a family member. It responds in every aspect of our life in the same way. You reach a point where you just say, it's 9 days wonder. It's time for me to get on to something else. I'm time for me to move on.
I didn't want to be an old man and be this angry all the time, but the corruption is overwhelming, and you think you can't see very far in the future, and it occupies my mind most of the time. And you wake up in the morning and turn on the radio, and it's like listening for broken glass.
So you're not accepting that it's normal. You're
no,
still outraged.
No, it's not. Not at this level.
Outraged.
Not at this level whatsoever.
I'm worried.
I am too.
Yeah. I think that's... I mean, I'm outraged. And I'm... I don't know. I'm compelled to read. I spend way too much reading this stuff. But it really worries me. It really worries me about what's going to happen to this country. And you can say, well, we always come back. You know, we go way far to the right, and then we swing back. And I'm hoping that's true, but it seems like we're close to a cliff.
Mike wants me to bring Alaska into this. He sent me a note about the Corrupt Bastards Club and listed Ted Stevens, Bill Allen of Vico, Tom Anderson, Vic Coring.
Yeah.
Okay, you know these guys?
I know
about Ted Stevens and Bill Allen. Yeah. I don't know about Tom Anderson.
Yeah.
The Corrupt Bastards.
Oh, yeah.
Club.
Oh, yeah. And I read that. I watched that whole story unfold, and I shook my head, and I said, I knew it. I wasn't shocked. I was indignant. I wasn't outraged. I knew it all along. All you got to do is follow the money. Look at these guys. Look at it.
Wasn't Bill Allen involved in bringing a young 15-year-old girl from the lower 48 to serve as his mistress? Was that part
there
of it?
There was prostitution involved in young girls for prostitution, underage, drug, all sorts of stuff. That was about as bad as it gets.
Well, it was an oil field scam is really what it amounted to. And I spent 40 years in the oil field here.
Yeah. But to be truthful, it's nothing more than an extension of the good old boys club that has existed in our government and in all of our corporate mentality from the beginning. You cover for the good old boys. That guy got out of land. He had too out of line. He had too much fun with a 15-year-old girl in a foreign land. Can we make her go away? She gonna become anything? She gonna change the world? No. This guy's a corporate master. Let's just kind of, that's.
You may be giving the answer to this next question here already. But based on your experience along with this discussion, is there a single characteristic that all corrupt organizations share in common? If there is, what would you point it out?
Secrecy.
Okay.
Self-preservation.
Okay, there's two there.
And that's that right there is why that's the heart of corruption is my response, my idea, because let's say, for instance, that this Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, did in fact do what he did. And now he's going to say and do anything. And the guys that are with him somewhere along the line, they just said, hey, if anything ever comes up, this is oath. This never happened, guys, right? Got your back. Got away with it.
What happens at Georgetown Prep stays at Georgetown Prep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. His yearbook is a pretty indicting document in itself. Judy, any single characteristic you can think of that's common to all corrupt organizations?
Self-promotions.
Okay, you said self-preservation, you said secrecy, you said self-promotions. And I say that it's the need for the alpha to maintain alpha status and grow in power. If you have somebody on top and he wants to stay on top and nothing else matters except him being on top, then he's going to do what it's going to take for his organization to maintain that status. And I see everybody shaking their heads here in agreement. That's good. I'm glad you agree with me.
Not
okay, I'm going to name 6 presidents here, and I have everybody rank those 6 presidents in terms of the most corrupt to the least corrupt. And I had you before the show go ahead and get your preferences of most corrupt to the least corrupt. And the presidents I listed are Nixon, Reagan, Clinton, W., Obama, and Trump. Now, everybody except Trump was a 2-term president. Although Nixon, whether he was a 2-term president, at least he was elected president twice. Everybody else was a 2-term president. And what you have listed here, and all of you have listed the exact same rankings.
Oh, really? And
yes. You're all identical numbers. Is that the least corrupt?
You need a more diverse panel.
Yeah, well, maybe
if,
so.
If he gets that panel, he may not make it out of this radio station alive.
I have three white people here who rank Obama as the least corrupt on that list. Number 2 is Clinton, who was the one who was actually impeached. When I think that we might believe that one of the reasons he was impeached because of the corrupt aspect of the Republican House at that time.
Yeah. And the Starr investigation, which Kavanaugh was part of.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of corruption in that Starr investigation, way beyond the mandate of what was a Whitewater they were investigating.
Yeah.
God knows.
And number 3 is George W. Bush. Okay. Which kind of is a little bit surprising that he would be ranked less corrupt than Reagan, who is the next one, number 4. Number 5, we have Nixon.
I think that's a matter of intent there. Between W and Reagan, I think W just wanted to get out there and work on the ranch, pretend to be a cowboy. You know, I think Reagan had, at least in the beginning when he was still lucid, I think he probably was in it for more of the, and we need to change the face of where this nation is going. We need to install more conservative values, more conservative judges, and we'll stop at nothing to do that.
And Reagan's big scandal was arms for hostages, had to do with before the election, where he would keep the Iranian hostages under Iranian control, or the embassy hostages under Iranian control till after the election. And by doing that, he would win. Carter lost. And then on the day of the inauguration was whenever Carter announced, or at the inauguration ceremony, Carter announced that the hostages were coming home. And then subsequently there were arms delivered to through Israel to Iran for that. And then we have Nixon was the next rank at number 5. And we all believe that Trump's even more corrupt than Nixon. And Nixon was actually removed from office. He had to resign.
With the number of resignations in Trump's, or departures at least, I mean, Scott Pruitt has to be one of the most unbelievably corrupt individuals that I've ever seen take a public office for any period of time. And for all of these individuals that just keep a revolving door of absolute bad actors, of corrupt and indecent. These are not the very best people in my little black book, I'll tell you that much. These are charlatans and carpetbaggers, and I am sad to see them with a say in the way our government is being run. It's unfortunate.
Having them in the White House is like being away from home on vacation and knowing that burglars are in your house and the phones don't work.
You want to defend your ranking here, Judy? It's the same as everybody else's.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure it needs defending.
I mean, every day. You know, the best, I forget who it was. It was one of the late night hosts, John Oliver or somebody. He said, every time I think Trump hits rock bottom, he crashes through and just goes on another depth. And it's just, how does this happen? How is it that through, I mean, just the example of what happened this weekend where the UN Assembly, how could you possibly have gotten to that point of standing up in front of that microphone and not expecting that reaction?
And, you know, I think Nixon, for as corrupt as he was, understood government and he was corrupt, okay? Mm-hmm. But he did understand government. I think he maybe had some kind of strange loyalty to the system of government, even though he corrupted it. But I don't know what Trump is loyal to besides himself. And the things he does that, like saying that in front of the United Nations and seeming surprised at their response, it's just a sort of tone deafness to what he's supposed to be doing.
Well, he didn't have Stephen Miller hand out tickets to everybody to attend the rally. It was these other people that came from all over the world.
Yeah, Stephen Miller.
Well, to me, the most corruptible thing about the whole thing, though, is not what he is doing himself, that he's doing out in the open. It's that McConnell and Ryan and those guys all go along with it. Mm-hmm. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
And it's just like being under the banner of being a Republican. We have 1 minute, but I want to talk a little bit about Trump saying these awful things about these accusers of Brett Kavanaugh. What do you think about that?
I think it's horrendous.
Totally, totally inappropriate and shows that he has no understanding of what his role is.
I don't believe a word that comes out of that man's mouth anymore. There is nothing truthful out of his mouth. Nothing.
Do you remember what he said? It was just come on recently, what he said whenever he's interviewed on TV on 9/11/2001?
Yeah, about the height of the tower.
Yeah, that he was sort of like professing that he was glad it happened, that 9/11 happened, because now his tower is the highest in New York as opposed to the World Trade Center. So that was pretty telling to me. I want to thank you all, folks, Gregor, Charles, Judy, for coming on the show. It's very, very energetic and very exciting. And thanks, Mike, for hosting us again. And to all you out there on Radio Land listening, thanks for listening. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters.